hey, welcome into the Lone Star Playbook. Like I said, some breaking news. DeAndre Moore has announced his intentions to enter the transfer portal. I said this was expected. The portal stuff isn't quite expected, but what was expected was the fact that he was not going to be on the team next year. Whether that was portal or the NFL draft, I know that a Texas site or two did report he was going to be in the NFL draft about a week ago. We held off because, we continued to hear that the portal is a possibility for him. And even before we got towards the end of the season and into the off season, into bowl prep, like, it was pretty clear when you look at everything else that he was probably not going to be on the team next year. I talked about it. Like, the four core receivers, Ryan Wingo, DeAndre Moore, Parker Livingston, Emmett Mosley, they have to figure out a better way to manage the budget, to manage the cap. Jamie French, Khalik Lockett, Michael Terry, Dalen McCutcheon, those are four true freshmen that barely played, if they played at all. And all of those guys were not cheap. There's a lot invested in them. And, DeAndre Moore's a two-year starter, but Ryan Wingo, he's the man. He's receiver one. He's a seven-figure player. They're not cutting him. Parker Livingston, really good value there. He wanted to be at Texas. He would have came to Texas if Nick or I was the receivers coach. He was always going to end up at Texas. And then Emmett Mosley, he's a guy that just portaled in, invested in out of the portal. So you looked around at it, and DeAndre Moore was kind of the odd man out. He was the one that made the most sense from the jump to be a cat casualty. I'm not saying that's exactly what this is, but, I do think that he looked at it, said, hey, I'm probably a round six, round seven pick at best. Texas, I can get paid more elsewhere than at Texas. So don't blame him at all. I also don't know exactly how much of this was his choice. Now, would Texas have wanted him back? Probably, yeah. But from what I heard, the financial offer that was made to him was not – something that really would make him want to come back. So it's understandable. The game is the game. This is part of it. Would probably expect him to end up back on the West Coast. That's where he's from, maybe at Georgia. Georgia was a finalist. He officially visited there. They're going to need a portal and some receivers. 2 years of experience starting in the SEC, that makes a lot of sense for what they usually target. So could Texas end up playing DeAndre Moore next year? Perhaps, go ahead.
Can I call it? Taj Lapoy gets him to Cal.
That'd be interesting. I don't know how much Taj Lapoy ever recruited him, considering he was a defensive assistant coach during that time. But DeAndre Moore Jr. is going in the transfer portal. Not a surprise. And, this doesn't change anything for Texas regarding them targeting receivers in the portal. They're going to target a receiver in the portal no matter what. This only, increases those chances. So, too, one thing I thought was really interesting, DeAndre Moore has really only ever played in the slot at Texas. That's all he's ever played. They portaled in Emmett Mosley, who in 1 year at Stanford lined up in the slot on over 90% of his snaps. Now, Emmett Mosley can play inside or outside, but he's better suited in the slot. And then you look at who they've recruited. Dalen McCutcheon can really only play in the slot. Michael Terry is kind of a positionless player. He's with the running backs right now. But if he lines up at receiver, it can kind of really only be in the slot. Cohen Brown can only play in the slot. Jermaine Bishop can only play in the slot. So that's four players who can only play in the slot, along with Emmett Mosley, who is kind of in the same boat. So the way that they built the receiver room and have targeted guys that can only play slot has been very questionable to me. I said this when Cohen Brown committed. But it's going to be very interesting to see how they do it. CB is asking about Danny Scudero. He is the San Jose State wide receiver. Texas actually played him earlier this year and I believe finished top five in receiving in the country. I don't think he's going to be a guy that ends up at Texas. He will have a high price tag, and, he's not going to cost what a Ryan Williams or Cam Coleman or Nick Marsh would, but to be in the same ballpark as those guys and not quite be those guys, what kind of investment are you making? So It looks like LSU is probably going to be the landing spot for him. I've seen he's already been predicted to end up there. Makes a ton of sense for Lane Kiffin, that offense, and what they need in receivers there. So, yeah, and, you know, I get the fans' perspective. NIL ruined college football. You can say that, and I understand it. But at the same time, nothing has sped up Texas being back more than NIL on the transfer portal. Like, few, if any, teams have reaped more rewards from being able to legally pay players than Texas has. That completely sped up the process of Steve Sarkisian year one to year two to year three to year four and on. It's his ability to use the transfer portal and flip the roster pretty quickly. So, yeah, that's what I got there. I don't know. You have any thoughts on DeAndre Moore going in the portal?
I mean, we talked about it all year that this receiving core didn't have a chief playmaker. And if you come to that indictment at the end of a year, then yeah, you let that guy move on. And I don't think this is a huge loss. You know, even this year, he had some issues with dropsies, and I think there were some physicality concerns too, at least in my eyes, from DeAndre Moore. I don't know how the general public felt, but I feel like you can do better with what Texas's resources have available.
Yeah, and it is kind of interesting to think about it because, like, yeah, he did have some drop problems, but for the most part, two seasons in a row, he was Texas's most consistent receiver over the last two seasons. And, like, yeah, obviously Matt Golden had a better 2024 year. But you look at the receivers who played in 24 and 25, he's easily the most consistent. And kind of a cap casualty, right? And they're looking at that and thinking, hey, this is the most consistent guy. We got to improve, you know? Yeah. And it is wild to think because there aren't – like with Ryan Wingo, I can think of all the different balls he dropped and lapses in communication, concentration. For DeAndre Moore, the only one I really think of is when he ran out of bounds versus Kentucky. And, I mean, they still ended up winning that one, so I think a fair amount of people have forgotten about that. But that was one of the lowest football IQ decisions I've ever seen, was him running out of bounds versus Kentucky when they were trying to bleed the clock. So, yeah, but don't have much more to offer on that one. But, you know, this has been expected. He was not practicing during bowl week. You know, and it did look for a long time like he was going to enter the NFL draft. That was never guaranteed. So, yeah, but other big news regarding the Longhorns football program. We missed Friday. We were at the state championship game, so did not get to talk about it then. But on Friday, Steve Sarkisian in Texas announced that they had fired Pete Kwiatkowski and Dwayne Aquina, and that Will Muschamp is back in Austin as defensive coordinator. Now that, you know, we've had some days to digest this, think it over, what are you thinking about the move?
Yeah, I have lost a lot of trust in Steve Sarkisian's ability to make sound and rational decisions after this one. I want to put these two different news pieces in different bottles because I think one bottle is a completely separate conversation than the other bottle. One bottle is PK getting fired. The other one is Muschamp getting hired. Let's start with PK getting fired. I don't look at the issues that Texas faced in 2025 and come to anything on defense before I come to inconsistent play from Arch at the beginning of the year, an inconsistent running game throughout the season, not being able to figure out your offensive line until week 10, your receivers not having playmakers like we just mentioned, situational play calling being a disaster, especially in short yardage situations. And then I'm going to the defensive side of the ball and I'm saying, yeah, there were some issues in the secondary for sure. It blows my mind that when they looked at the evaluation of this entire season, they looked at the defensive side and the defensive coordinator, the same defensive coordinator that has kept them in the top 15, top 20 of defenses in the country over the last two seasons, and decided to fire him. That blows my mind. Again, it's a big indictment on, I think, Sark's ability to make sound decisions. On the other side, in this bottle, is Will Muschamp getting hired. I do think it is a good hire at the end of the day. You know, I don't know, you know, the proven track record has been a little bit more hazy over the course of the past decade than it was the decade previous. But I do think it is a fascinating hire. He can recruit. He's been shown to recruit. And I'm curious to see what type of scheme he brings in 2026, because it's obviously going to have to be a little bit different than what he brought to this program 20 years ago. But I am fascinated to see what that looks like.
Yeah. When I saw the news, the first thing I thought of was, hey, USC has an open defensive coordinator job. He's been wanting to get back to the West Coast. He finishes the runner-up in 2023 whenever USC needed a DC and hired De'Anson Lynn from UCLA. And the night before PK gets fired, USC comes open. De'Anson Lynn takes a job at his alma mater. He's going to be the DC at Penn State. And Texas fires him. Am I saying this was a PR move by Texas? And, hey, we fired him. He didn't leave us, and that's why this happened. No, but I do think that's part of it. And I do think, you know, part of it is certainly that Steve Sarkisian and Johnny Nansen are tied at the hip. Johnny Nansen is a longtime buddy of Steve Sarkisian. They've coached on several staffs together. And, I mean, I know a lot of other people in the market, heard there was some knocking of heads between PK and Nansen. And PK is known to be able to work with anyone. He's known to be neutral. He doesn't really select favorites, and is, you know, well documented that he is someone people like working with, and that he is easier to work with than most coordinators. And him and Nansen, they knocked heads. And, you know, is it Sark picking Nansen over PK and that's it? That's what happened? I don't think so, because, I mean, Will Muschamp is the DC. He's going to be calling plays and calling the defense, not Nansen. So, I did want to bring it up because that combined with the USC thing makes it make a lot more sense. And Steve Sarkisian has said, you know, now that I must champ, I don't have to, whenever we call a timeout on defense, I don't have to be in the defensive huddle or on the headset talking. Like, he basically just said, you know, yeah, I never trusted PK. I had to call the defense. I had to do all this. Not true. Not completely true. And it's not like he's not going to be on the headsets whenever there's a timeout with Muschamp in town either. You know, so that was a very strange comment. Very strange comment. And, like, yeah, I'm the head coach, but I only want to worry about offense. Very strange. And with Muschamp, one thing I do want to bring up, and it does make the move make some more sense. Sarkisian brought up the style of defense we need to play in the SEC, how we need to win ball games with our defense, and we want it to look more like Muschamp and not PK. What he meant by that is PK and his bend don't break defense. We're going to wear you down. We're going to play off the line of scrimmage. We're not giving up big plays, maybe something underneath, but we're going to make a tackle and limit, you know, some yards after the catch. The thing is, that style of defense is horrible if you have an inconsistent offense and you're playing teams that can control the clock. Georgia controlled the clock the entire game. Kentucky did too. And if you're playing this bend don't break defense where a team can have a possession, go 8 minutes, and then you go three and out, you're going to lose the football game more often than not. And that is what happened to Texas this year. They got lucky versus Kentucky. Ryan Niblett saved them. But, I mean, the Georgia game and other games this year, it was all on Texas getting ball controlled. So, with Muschamp, there's going to be more aggression. There's going to be more blitzes. And I think there will be a more physical style of defense. And, you know, I think a lot of fans are going to be happy. There will be less, you know, snaps where the corners are all 10 yards off the line. But, you know, I'm with you with what you said. Like, I do think Muschamp is going to bring good things to the defense. I think change is good. I don't know if it was necessary, but I think it's good. And I'm curious and excited to see what the defense will look like, how much more aggressive they'll be. But by no means can you look at this and say, hell yeah, Texas upgraded. Like yeah. With Chad Scott, Jabbar Jalil, you can say, hell yeah, Texas upgraded. You can't say that at DC. And Texas still has a safeties coach opening as well. So it'll be very interesting. Muschamp is going to be around during the bowl game observing. Won't be calling the defense. That'll be Johnny Nansen. But I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. Anything else you got on that or want to hit on?
No, I just think overall, I think it's a bet. You said change is good. I don't think change is necessarily good in this case. That's the only point where I disagree. Just I don't believe in fixing something that isn't broken. And sure, maybe Sark had to hop in a huddle here and there and maybe hop on the headset. You're the damn head coach, you know?
Yeah. Like,
I'm not a fan of this decision whatsoever, but, you know, I am a believer in Will Muschamp, always have been. didn't really feel like he had the necessary resources when he was at South Carolina. So I'm curious to see how that manifests now in 2026.
Yeah. I'm curious who the safeties coach hire will be. Now, I know Blake Gideon is a name that's been thrown out there. I do not think that's happening unless Johnny Nansen gets fired, because Blake Gideon has a DC title at Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. A lot of responsibility. He calls the defense. He gets paid extra to call the defense. And at Texas right now, you have a DC and Muschamp and a co-DC and Nansen. They can't even give him a co-DC title, and even if they do, it's going to be less money than what he makes at Georgia Tech. So I don't think Gideon and that is happening. The main guy I'm watching is Travarius Robinson. He's Georgia's safeties coach. He's coached with Muschamp pretty much everywhere he's been. And I do think, you know, if Texas still doesn't have a safeties coach hired in a week or two, it's probably because they're waiting on Georgia to finish, you know, playing in the playoffs. So Robinson is a guy we're watching. I don't really have any other names I'm ready to say yet. I haven't looked a ton into it, but yeah. And like one thing I think is very interesting, you know, there's these narratives that get shaped and other things like that. With Dwayne Aquina, by the middle of the season, everyone is like, hey, he's a retread, shouldn't have been brought back. The game's passed him, he's washed. You know, we were just trying to relive the glory days, and it was always going to be a one-year thing. Like, he's old. It was always going to be a one-year thing. And when he gets fired, you know, yeah, it makes sense. He lost it. They were just trying to relive the glory days. And then those same people are hyping themselves up about Will Muschamp, like it's not a very kind of similar hire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As a – not relive the glory days, but bring a coach back that's well-respected and hope he can work the same magic. So it's going to be an interesting offseason. Another thing, too – the press conference, either the day after, hours after the PK and Muschamp news broke, Sark is asked if there are going to be any more staff changes. He said, no, not at this time. There's going to be another coaching staff change. I can 99% guarantee it. So, you know, he's not going to say, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely where I'm thinking. But at the same time, I mean – like, I don't think it's happening at this point, because I think we would have heard more and there'd be more out there. But, like, it's such bullshit if you're going, hey, PK, this wasn't good enough for us. Your ass is fired. We're replacing you. And it's like, oh, Kyle Flood, it's okay. Yeah, it's just a fluke. You know, we'll be back next year. You got it. Like, drawing the line for PK and then letting Kyle Flood have his job back is ridiculous and unexplainable. And I get it. Sark preaches consistency. You know, they want as much continuity as they can have. And, you know, if you have to replace your running backs coach, probably your receivers coach, it would not make a ton of sense to do the line coach as well, even though I do think it should happen. So, going to be a very interesting bowl game and early start to the offseason. But, yeah, so I don't know. But we're going to get away from Texas coaching changes and stuff for a sec. If y'all have any questions or comments, anything you want to say, just drop it in the chat and we will hit on it. But yeah, I want to talk about the Texas High School Football State Championship. Nick made fun of me for being a big school snob the whole week and then only showed up for Saturday.
Not on par. That's different. I had work now. I did go 9-3 on my picks this week. I will say that. So your boy cooked.
Congrats. I mean, I think there was maybe one or two one-score games in all the 10-11 man games. So not the most entertaining week of state championships, but a few decent games. South Oak Cliff taking down Richmond Randall, getting revenge. South Oak Cliff's fifth straight trip to Jerry World for the state championship and their third state championship win in 5 years. Duncanville lost another heartbreaker to North Shore. Reginald Samples, who is very, 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 very likely to retire and announce that sooner or later, will likely finish his career 2-4 versus North Shore. Mm-hmm. Not great either. Was trying to even it up. But, I mean, that game was a stinker. I did not have any fun watching that. It was tied at 0-0 going into the second half. North Shore went up 7-0, then 10-0, then Duncanville got a touchdown late. And then, I mean, kind of just fell apart. They went for it on like 4th and 3 from, I think, their own 34 and didn't get it. And then North Shore needed out. And then the nightcap, DeSoto took down CE King 55-27, more than double their score. And that game was out of reach early on as well. So not a ton of stuff there, but do want to talk about two Texas targets. I spoke with Brian Swanson after South Oak Cliff's big win over Richmond Randall. Sorry, Google pisses me off so much and I have to use it on this. But here's Mr. Swanson, top 100 prospect, currently projected as a tackle, can also end up playing guard in college. The top three, or I should say the favorites, for over a year now has been Texas, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma. However, I feel pretty good saying Texas is the leader, at least most likely to land him. A lot of relationships and good things going here for Texas. His offensive line coach at South Oak Cliff is Zach Collins, who is the longtime trainer of current Texas O-lineman DJ Campbell, Andre Kojo, Jordan Coleman, Devin Coleman. He's also trained and worked with Trevor Goosby, Nate Kibble, Jaden Chapman, and a few others. Very tight relationship with Coach Flood. He's who put Kyle Flood on to the Coleman brothers originally, you know, called them about him for several years before the offer came through. And, I mean, is in consistent contact with Flood. Also, Chris Gilbert is pretty much the primary recruiter here. I mean, Kyle Flood is, but Gilbert's right there. Gilbert attended South Oak Cliff, is an alum of South Oak Cliff, and ended up coaching there as their head coach at one point as well. And they're in constant contact. And then Deron Gatewood, the offensive line analyst, is also in the mix. And Steve Sarkisian, you know, talks to them a little bit as well. You know, Texas, they need to sign a big 2027 O-line class, 5 or 6 guys at least. And, you know, of all the offensive linemen they're targeting, this is the one to feel the best about. Texas is in a great spot. And, you know, he also gets extra insight into the program from DJ Campbell, who he talks with, you know, every few weeks through his relationship with Zach Collins. So a lot of good things going here. Definitely think Texas is the leader. He wants to shut it down and commit to a school before we get into the summer. So probably going to be a spring commitment. And, you know, I'm not going to put a crystal ball in here. I'm honestly probably done with crystal balls. I'd like to be. But if I was putting one in, it would definitely be in favor of Texas. Really good spot early on. Played primarily at left tackle for South Oak Cliff this year, but whenever they want to run in between the tackles, they'll move him to right guard. Played most of the snaps in the state championship game actually at right guard, but, you know, Cal Flood has told him, I see you as a true tackle, and I do think that's what they'd try him out at first, you know, if/when he ends up at Texas. Another prospect I want to talk about, Sarad Baker, a.k.a. the hottest stock in the state of Texas. This morning for the Stampede, wrote kind of a feature story on him, his, you know, tremendous playoff run he's been on. And here was his second touchdown of the game. He's not Bijan by any means. I'm never going to compare anyone to Bijan, but this is a very Bijan-esque cut, I should say. But, yeah, just going to play the video.
It's because he wears number 5, right? That's why you thought about that?
No, not at all. Didn't even think about that until he brought it up.
Does he have track numbers?
He does. He ran track as a sophomore, and his PR was 11.47, but his play speed's faster than that, and yeah, he's absolutely probably going to run better. Sorry, getting a call. But yeah, so Texas offered him late Thursday night around 9 o'clock. He's Jabbar Jalouk's first ever offer at Texas. And the Longhorns, you know, they're in a pretty good spot early on. It's also new to him, and he's picking up an offer like every other day because he rushed for 1,600 yards and 24 touchdowns in 6 playoff games. Went over 300 yards twice and then had 125 for 2 touchdowns in the state championship game. The 125 rushing yards is the least he had in the 6-game playoff run. You know, didn't say a ton on record, again, because this is also new to him, but I thought it was interesting. I'm like, hey, did you have a dream school growing up or school you pulled for? He said it was Alabama. but that, you know, nowadays he pretty much just watches a ton of college football, doesn't really have a team, but definitely is going to be one to watch. He's an 85-3 star right now. He's not going to finish as one. Will end up probably as an 88 or 89-3 star, at least I'd say. And like Steven Delgado brought up too, he's about 75% in that game. He came down with the flu earlier in the week and kind of had a flu game performance. And, I mean, hey, it's in the Stampede. Go check it out. Kind of talked about battling through that. Also was brought up by Claude Mathis in the halftime interview, which I wish I could play and our audio was working. But, Nick, have you seen that?
I have not.
It's absolutely hilarious here. I'll play it into my AirPods because – I think it's pretty damn good. Claude Mathis, they ask him about kicking it to Dylan Mitchell, who is C.E. King's like running back receiver that PR'd at 10.17 in the 100 meter as a freshman. And he's like, I told him not to kick it to him, and he did. Here it is. I'll play it. Oh.
So I'm not happy at all. Dylan Mitchell, he's deadly.
We can't hear it.
Damn. All good. But yeah, so wanted to hit on those two. And like Steven Delgado brings up, Sherrod Baker also sealed the deal for South Lake Carroll. They had the ball with 4 seconds left in their own 1 yard line. Needed to get the ball, you know, out of the end zone, get a yard or two. And he ended up taking it all the way to the crib. 99 yards. His time expired. So, I mean, truly a historic playoff run, one that'll be remembered for a long time in Texas high school football history. And the full stats from his playoff run, he had 152 carries, 1,606 rushing yards, and 21 touchdowns on 10.6 yards per carry. Had 12 catches for 215 rushing yards or 215 receiving yards, and 3 touchdowns on 18 yards per catch. He finished the year averaging just over 200 rushing yards per game, and in the playoffs, he averaged 267.7. So, I mean, truly remarkable stuff from Baker. And the thing I like about him that I think is really interesting, he was a receiver up until, you know, being a full-time running back this year. As a sophomore in 2024, they used him kind of as an offensive skill weapon. They'd line him up in the backfield. They'd line him up at receiver, and he'd move around a lot. Because they had DeAndre Ryden, Tiger Ryden, who is now a freshman at A&M. They had him as a senior. And then they also had Mison Johnson-Cook, who was a sophomore and then ended up transferring back home to Illinois, where he's originally from. But, I mean, it's crazy to think, Nick, like if Mison Johnson-Cook doesn't move back to Illinois, we might not even be talking about Sherrod Baker right now. We probably aren't. So he made the most of his opportunities and went from, you know, a known name in South Dallas to a national name across the country that picked up offers from Texas, Oregon, Ohio State, you know, all after this playoff run. So truly the hottest stock in Texas. He's got 26 offers right now, probably on pace to finish with 36 plus. So great story there. But some other stuff I want to get into. I know you haven't paid a ton of attention because you now cover the Cowboys, but you were in the recruiting space for a long time. I know you've kind of followed, you know, Texas's recruiting since you left. But any guys that stand out off the top of your head from the 2026 recruiting class, any guys you're most excited to see in the burnt orange?
Easily Tyler Atkinson for me. That was just a guy that popped up on the radar when I was still covering recruiting, and I always thought he was an MF-er. So I'm probably most excited to see him, but also, I mean, Jermaine Bishop for sure. I mean, we could go on and on about him as well. But Atkinson, I love those freaks in the second level. I was a big Harold Perkins guy. I was a big, I was a big Ty Anthony Smith guy. Leonga Lefau, I was a big fan of his too. So, just throw Darian Gillette, even though he didn't work out, I was a big fan of his too. But I'm a big fan of Atkinson. Let me look through this commit class while you talk on yours.
Yeah, hard to not go Jermaine Bishop, historically one of the best Texas high school football players of all time. can project him to the league as a corner, as a receiver, as a safety. He can do it all, and a great young man too. Obviously, Atkinson, I like him. Derek Cooper, I mean, super explosive running back and still, like, green to the position. He's only been playing running back for 2 years. He's arriving at Texas with, like, less than 200, 300 carries in his career. So I really like that part. Came up playing receiver, can catch the ball really well out of the backfield, so he's going to play early at Texas because of that. And also, I mean, he's hit, like, 10-5-7, 10-6-1. He brings an explosive element, a speed element to the running back room that lacked this year. So, yeah, and then Zay Capelot, of course. Nick, this is Jermarian Carlton's homie, by the way. Great kid, both of them.
Yeah.
But Jermarian Carlton as well. I mean, brought it up last week, a lot of potential there, versatile, can play D-line, edge, either or honestly both. You know, he has a lottery ticket frame. About 265, 270 right now, could easily end up holding north 300, and has God-given traits. So the sky's the limit for him. It's surprised you didn't mention him, Nick, because I pulled this up. Look at little Jermarian right here.
Man, yep, it's crazy.
Put him on. This was in fall camp of Jermarian Carlton's freshman year, before he even enrolled in high school.
I forget what I was doing exactly that day.
You're there to see Mikhail Harrison pilot, probably.
I was seeing Torian for sure. I feel like Mikhail had already graduated. I could be wrong.
No, because Torian and Mikhail are in the same
class. Okay.
Yeah.
I was there. I knew I was seeing Torian, and I had visited a couple of schools that day. I visited one in Austin. I don't remember which one off the top of my head. And then on the way back home, I swung by Temple, and Coach Pilot, who's Mikhail Harrison Pilot's dad, he's a position coach of some sort, and you would know better than I would. And I pointed over at this kid. I was like, "Who's that?" And he's like, "Yeah, he's a freshman. He's going to play with us this year." I was like, "Oh my God, let me get a picture of him." And his Twitter account only had like 4 followers at the time. So I that's probably going to be my very last, "Hey, I found this guy on day one" type guy.
Yeah. Well, hey, we're way to go. All right. Any other guys from the 26 class you want to hit on?
I just want Rocky Cummings to work out just for the bit. But Samari Matthews, I love the length on Samari Matthews. I think he's going to be a really fun one to watch. Kosi Akpala, I'm fascinated to see how he develops. You know, I'm always a little bit hesitant of the project, hey, he's got all the traits, let's get him here and get him put together type guy. But I think Kosi Akpala is probably one of the safer bets in that category, just because of the production he has had already. That's who I'm looking at. And then I was going through this commit list, and I had heard of every single one, and I know every single one pretty well, except for Teray Davis. I had not even known about this kid. I didn't even know that he ended up in the class. So that was one that surprised me. So if you saw me make a face when I was going through this list, I was like, oh, yeah, decent player. I'm like, who is that? Who's Teray Davis?
They offered him in, like, late October, and he plays at Fairview High School in Boulder. His dad actually played defensive back at CU Boulder in the late 90s, and they offered him, but were, like, never in it, never really recruited him. And I also just think they figured they didn't have a chance, but I don't know. Colorado's recruiting operation is also stupid as hell. That's why they're in the position they're in. I mean, they literally employ Warren Sapp as a coach.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, he's at Fairview. He plays horrible competition. Like, I don't even want to, you know, call it 2A level competition in Texas, because it is some of the slowest opponents I've ever seen on someone's film. But the good thing is he dominates. I mean, as a senior, led his team in tackles for loss, interceptions, fumbles, receiving yards, rushing yards, touchdowns. Like, he did it all and was absolutely dominant. So really like that. And then he was a UCLA commit, and everyone thought he decommitted when they fired that staff, because he posted, like, my recruitment's now open. But then about a month later, he's like, yeah, I never decommitted from UCLA. I just opened my recruitment. It's one of those, right? Yeah, of course. So he OV to Wisconsin, I think Indiana, Washington, and Texas in the season. And then Texas beat out Washington and Indiana for him. So he's going to play safety or corner, He's ranked as an athlete prospect for pretty much everyone in the country, recruited him at safety and not receiver. But, yeah, main thing I'm curious about with him, like, he's playing nobody's on tape and is dominating, like, from a receiving perspective, and he has really good ball skills, but he's not physical. And if you're not going to be physical versus slow on athletic kids in Boulder, Colorado, what's going to happen in the SEC at Texas? So, that is the main thing I'm curious for and I'm watching regarding him, his level of physicality and the want to come downhill and get off blocks and make plays. So, yeah, but let's see. Just going to hit on these comments from the top. Woodcrest said, Nansen can go. Sark needs less buddies on staff. I'm not – I agree with you from the Nansen can go thing, but not because of the buddies on staff thing. Because he's not a good recruiter. He hasn't been a horrible coach, but he hasn't been great recruiting. And that's half the battle in college football. It's Jimmy's and Joe's, not X's and O's. You know, look at the guys he's landed. Bo Barnes would have came to Texas if I was coaching linebackers. He always wanted to be there. Peter Jenkins was quite literally his position coach at Skyline. He was always going to Texas. Jonathan Cunningham, they beat out TCU and Utah for him. That was not hard to do. Tyler Atkinson, Nansen wasn't even the primary recruiter there, and he ended up at Texas because they dropped the bag on him. It's what it was. Kosiv Paula, that kid, like, told me the day after they offered him, 2 days after they offered him, I'm going to Texas as long as they'll take me. There was very little work that had to be done in that one. And then Rocky Cummings, well, they flipped him from a Cal program that fired Justin Wilcox and was bringing in an entirely new staff. So, like, what wins can he bang his chest on in recruiting? And, I mean, even from a developmental perspective, during his two seasons at Texas, who can you say got better? Did Leonga LaFalle get much better at all throughout his career? Not really. Did Anthony Hill look any different in year three compared to year two? Not really. So what value is being brought here? Oh, he's Polynesian. He has some ties to the Polynesian community. Who? Who has he landed with that? Yeah. No one. So with Nansen, I brought it up. There's some butting of heads between him and PK at times, and I do think that went into the decision with PK. But if I'm Texas and I was in charge and calling the shots, I'd make Muschamp the linebackers coach, and Nansen would be gone. But I'm not Steve Sarkisian, and at the same time, I don't know what expectation level you can have for Steve Sarkisian to fire one of, if not his best friends on staff in Johnny Nansen. So very curious what it'll end up being with him. If he's back next year, he's, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be really trying to poach him to make him a DC because he pretty much is already. And he's also not like a super attractive head coaching candidate. Now, he was a finalist for the Washington State job, and Wazoo reporters reported that if he got the job, it was very likely he would have made Chris Jackson his OC.
Washington State has reporters.
Yeah, right. But both Nansen and Jackson played at Washington or at Wazoo, but Wazoo ended up hiring Kirby Moore from Mizzou, who is Kellen Moore's younger brother. So, yeah, very, very, very curious to see how much longer Nansen will be around. Because I do think there is some value there in giving Muschamp the role at linebackers coach. So, and also, you get rid of that co-DC title. Maybe that, in, you know, boosts your chances of getting Blake Gideon or another difference maker at the safeties coaching position since that's open. But, yeah, appreciate it, Bevo Lance Jason. The Screaming Bevo is my favorite Texas logo.
It is fire. So, it is fire.
Pretty good one. Thing is, this one and all my Nike hoodies, they just – you can't really tell, but they all end up cracking pretty quickly. So, like, I don't usually wear this out of the house because it's kind of raggedy. But, yeah, Arnaldo Rangel said, will this college football playoff go to 16 teams? We all saw the Dirt Burglars and Little Brother both bow out. The two teams Texas beat. 12-team playoff is a farce. What do we think, Nick? Because we didn't talk playoffs at all, really.
Yeah, James Madison got off to such a horrible start. If they had started off better, that would have been a competitive game. Like, they threw the kitchen sink out there from an offensive game planning standpoint. It just started slow. But yeah, I think 16 is probably the likely direction. I just it should have been six. It should have been six. I'm wasting time here talking about it because it'll never happen. But it should have been six. You give the top two teams first round buys, and then you just go right into a 14 playoff. But if we're looking toward, you know, what could benefit some of these teams that got left out, like a Notre Dame or a Vanderbilt or a Texas, and then you could also benefit the little schools like the G5s, then, you know, 16 or 20 is probably the likely scenario. And if you go 20, then, you know, all those G5s, they just go play all the P5s, and then that's your version of a first round bye, you know, and no one's bitching anymore about it. So I do think G5s should be included in the playoff. I'll argue to my deathbed about that. Sure, they might get blown out every year. Fine, whatever. But there's going to be two, three teams every decade that come around. The Boise State team was one last year who I think could have won a first-round game if they got slotted into a first-round game that had the ability to beat Power 5 teams. Shit, they almost went to Autzen Stadium and beat Oregon in week 2 of the season last year. So, you know, those teams should have the opportunity to do so. It completely negates the reasoning to have 130 some odd teams in FBS if only 45 of them or 50 have a legitimate shot at actually making the college football playoff. So, you know, expand it, I guess, whatever. I'm losing interest in the college football playoff, though, because here's this, too. How many teams really have a legitimate shot at winning a national championship? None of the teams that played this past weekend. So why are we all up in arms about it? You know, so it's like, well, what's the big deal? You know, and neither did Vanderbilt. Hate to break it to you. Neither did Texas. Neither did Notre Dame. You know, none of these teams had a legitimate shot. It's all going to lead to about 5 or 6 teams having a shot at it at the end. And I think 6 is a little bit of a stretch this year. I think you really only got 5 that have a legitimate shot at winning it all. So who cares who's in the first round? Who gives a damn? They're not winning it anyway.
Yeah.
I agree with Patrick here. Do the bracket like the FCS. I honestly like the FCS structure, and the FCS is a perfect example. Look at what's happening with the FCS this year. Illinois State, who went 7-4 during the regular season, 8-4 during the regular season, is now in the damn final because they had an opportunity of making the damn bracket. They beat North Dakota State on the road. They beat Villanova on the road. And they beat UC Davis on the road. They beat all these big-time programs on the road, and now they have a shot at winning a national championship. And that's Illinois State is basically the Boise State of, like, the year that they beat the Fiesta, or they beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. Like, that's the type of talent you're getting from Illinois State in the playoffs right now. So it's like, those teams should have an opportunity, because once every 10, 15 years, those teams are going to sneak into the championship. I rest my
case. So I get what you're saying. I like the points you made. I would enjoy a G5 only playoff and a Power 4 only playoff. I would enjoy that. I think a lot of people would too. And I'm with you, you know, James Madison, Tulane, I see why they're included. But the people who are like, you can't include G5, they get blown out every game. Like, brother, Tennessee got their ass kicked by Ohio State. SMU got their ass kicked by Penn State. There were ass kickings last year from Power 14 to Power 14. But no one brings up that unless you're trying to, you know, push your narrative that the G5 shouldn't be in. So, you know, I'm with it. I think it's cool they're in there. But, like, long-term, I would like to see a G5-only playoff so we can get some better games, or at least a better shot of having better games in the early rounds. But, I mean, I don't know. Excited to see the matchups, you know, this next round. Oregon versus Texas Tech. Georgia versus Ole Miss. Bama versus Indiana. What's the other one?
Indiana, Alabama?
No. Miami, Ohio State. That's what I'm missing. So those should all be good. And also, I mean, hilarious weekend if you're a Texas fan. Sooners go up 17-0, choke it. There you go. Choklahoma, too easy. And then A&M, you had more people arrested at your stadium than points scored.
Yeah.
I mean, it nuts. Like,
they haven't scored a touchdown against an FBS opponent since, like, November 8th.
Sounds about right.
An offensive touchdown.
Yeah. And, I mean, that just made me think of it, too. Like, it's crazy to think Pete Kwiatkowski really got fired. And in the last 2 years, I think allowed one or only two offensive touchdowns to Oklahoma and A&M in 4 total games.
That's insane.
But, But yeah,
but he's the problem.
Yeah. All right, we're going to keep it rolling on these comments. Daryl G says, I believe Sark's coaching decisions have turned emotional because of the hot seat. Sark needs to evaluate his play calling for most of the season. I don't know if they're quite – I mean, I do think some of it is emotional, but not all of it. And I'm with you. Like, it's total bullshit that a lot of the reason for Texas's struggles were the offense, and he's going to turn around and try to gaslight everyone to thinking it was the defense by firing PK. So, yeah, play calling needs to be evaluated. He needs to audit himself and his offensive staff. So, yeah. Let's see. Nathan said PK was relying on who he had calling the secondary, at least with Muschamp and his one voice. That is true, too. For those who don't know, under PK, he would set the front seven, and either safeties or corners coach would set the secondary. So when Terry Joseph and Blake Gideon were there, that was Terry Joseph often setting everyone up. And then, you know, under the new staff change, it was Dwayne Aquina calling it out. And I mean, several times each game, you could see the back seven and secondary, or the front seven and secondary, were not quite on the same page. And that's when a lot of coverage busts happened, especially once Michael Taft, Angelon, and McDonald went down, and Xavier Phillips was out there getting barbecue chicken. So I am with you. I do think that change is going to be good with Muschamp and it only coming from one voice rather than two. Yeah. Hey, Malcolm Kelly as receivers coach, wouldn't hate it. Would be a very interesting move. He's obviously in Oklahoma Sooner and famously had that freestyle rap in the Oklahoma locker room. So that'd be quite interesting. But hey, you know who else is in Oklahoma Sooner, Nick? Daryl K. Royal.
There you go.
Look how that turned out. How many times have Malcolm Kelly and Daryl K. Royal been mentioned in the same sentence? Probably not much. Dave Keith Williams said, Muschamp is a great defensive coach and motivator, but the biggest issue with Texas was the offense, primarily offensive line and play calling. Texas ranked number 24 in scoring defense and 51st in scoring offense. Agreed. And one of the plus things I like about Muschamp, like, PK is a very reserved personality. He's not going to get too hot, too cold, too high, too low. Not really a yeller. He's not going to, you know, chew guys out and cuss their ass out on national TV on the sideline. And, you know, for the most part is, like I said, pretty reserved. Muschamp is in your face. He's going to yell at you. You're going to do your damn job, and he's going to punch the whiteboard. And also, I mean, spending 5-6 seasons around Kirby Smart, that's never been a bad thing for anyone, you know. He's a master motivator. Muschamp has had that kind of title as master motivator, Ash Chewer and Intense before he was working with Kirby Smart, and that only improved once he did. So I'm excited to see the aggression and physicality Texas will play with, and I'm sure, you know, Sark and company, everyone is hoping he can bring some of that Georgia to Texas. And, I mean, he even said that in the press conference too. So – yeah, David Keith Williams said Texas needs to get at least three likely difference makers on the offensive line each recruiting class. Unfortunately, the last class Texas got at least three likely difference maker on the O-line was the 2022 class. Yep, right on the head. And, I mean, the conversation I had with several people this weekend is like, imagine how everyone looks at Kyle Flood, Steve Sarkisian, and this Texas program if Mario Cristobal doesn't leave Oregon for Miami and Kelvin Banks and Cam Williams end up at Oregon. Because Kelvin Banks changed the trajectory of the program.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Yes, Quinn Ewers is the quarterback, was throwing the passes, and they had great players, Xavier Worthy, they, you know, Jalen Ford, Anthony Hill. But Kelvin Banks enrolled in June, and in September was easily, by far and away, the best offensive tackle in the Big 12 as an 18-year-old true freshman who'd been on campus for 3 months. That's not development, coaching. That's recruiting and you landing a damn good player. Yeah, I mean, wild to think about how different it'd be right now if Cristobal never left. But, yeah. K. catching up on some of these. David Keith Williams said a 2026 Texas signee that I think is critically undervalued is Cullen Brown. I don't understand why he is not a four-star recruit. He's the fastest Texas recruit and has been dominant in track and football. Why is Brown so undervalued by recruiting services? Well, four-star means you're a projected draft pick, and with all due respect to Cullen Brown, he's not as explosive athletically as other guys listed by him. Yes, he's a great prospect, high floor prospect, but he's hit, I think, 10-7 in the 100-meter. He's not the fastest guy in the class. That'd be Derek Cooper. But with Brown, I've talked about this before. It's build-up speed. Turn on his film. How many times is he catching a screen and going 0 to 60 in 10 yards, and he's at full speed by the time he's crossing the first down line? Very rarely, if ever. He's been productive. He's been great in the best football district in the state of Texas with DeSoto, Duncanville, all those programs. But the way I've described him is he's like DeAndre Moore, jack of all trades, master of none. He's good at everything. He's great at nothing. And that's okay. They can still be great college players. But, like, he is not a guy you can really look at and project to the NFL as a high school player right now. You know, there are certain traits you look for, athletic abilities, athletic markers, and it hasn't shown. So I see the argument for being a four-star. I don't know if I've ever been asked more times about why is this guy a three-star than Cullen Brown, but I just think
you should have been around for the Jonathan Brooks conversations. My goodness, that was one too.
Well, dude, you should have seen our board and Ricky Stewart committed. Like, he needs to be a four-star. And I had to be like, hey, respectfully, you don't know what you're talking about. Watch his film. Stop looking at the stats.
Yeah.
Because he did finish as like the 11th leading rusher. But, hey, where's Ricky Stewart now? Out of the program in less than a year. Hasn't been at the program since September.
Yeah.
Who would have thought it? And I think 24/7 was the only site that made him a three-star. But with Cullen, I mean, it's just hard to project him as a draft pick right now. That's why he's not a four-star. So. Yeah. Antoine said thoughts on Ray Gates leaving North Crowley. Nick, what are your thoughts? Because he's now on the North Texas Mean Green staff, and I believe his title is edge rushers coach.
Yeah, something on D-line. Yeah, it's going to be huge for UNT. Very thrilled about that. I'm very thrilled to see what North Crowley does with their hire. They should go get Eli Reinhart, the head coach at Hutto, and hope that he ends up winning that interview over.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. That's who I hire, too. Zay Capelot said, I know Dylan Berryman decommitted. Where does he stand? Sorry, excuse me. Where does he stand now? I think Nebraska or Kentucky. I saw Kentucky offered him this morning. North Carolina, LSU, Texas Tech are also in there. I think Mississippi State as well. But one thing I can say is not Texas. I think it was a stupid-ass move then. I think it's an even dumber move now. Texas dropped him. And they dropped him thinking, hey, we're signing Corey Wells, Avadney Cleveland, James Johnson will be all right. That's three really good ones. Well, Corey Wells and Avadney Cleveland flipped. They went from having four D-line commits a month before signing day to only signing one. And now they're going to have to portal for young defensive linemen. So it was not a good personnel decision then and an even worse one now in my eyes. But with Berryman, he's playing through some injury. I don't know what it is, and I know Texas wanted him to get an MRI, and he wanted to wait, or at least wanted to wait till he was on campus or something like that, and that was part of the reason they dropped him. But I really don't know where he's supposed to end up. I assume Nebraska probably has the best chances, though. So, yeah. Nick, if you got to run too, I don't know what you got going on the rest of the day.
Yeah, I do have to bounce, but hey, good chopping it up with you. We won't be on Friday. Merry Christmas, everybody. I will see you guys before the new year. So excited to talk some quarterfinals next week, and we'll get into it.
Yes, sir. See you, dog.
Yeah.
Peace. All right. I'm going to finish up, hit on these comments, then get out of here. David Keith Williams said, linebacker is a position of weakness for Texas with the losses of Ant Hill, Leonga Lafau, and Trey Moore. There's clearly young talent in the 26 recruiting class. Potentially that talent is dominant young talent at backer in the 26 recruiting class. However, what factor will that talent have for Texas in 2026? Tyler Atkinson's going to play a lot. He will either start or pretty much play starting level snaps. He's the most ready to play linebacker, and anyone in the 2026 class can play Mike, Will, even Sam, probably not though, because you'll have Brad Spence and other bigger bodies there, but really, really good. I mean, he's a great pursuit defender, great explosiveness, four-year starter at one of the best programs in the state of Georgia, played in some big games in the state of Georgia, won the 7A state championship as a junior, which is the highest classification in the Peach State. So with Atkinson, he's a phenomenal prospect. He's going to have high expectations from day one and should live up to them. So he's the main one I see playing. Kosip Paula, Rocky Cummings, I don't know how many snaps they'll actually see on defense, but they're big athletes that, you know, play hard, play through the whistle. So I definitely see both of them carving out a role in special teams, whether that's, you know, kickoff, punt return on punt. Like, they will be able to help the team in some form or fashion on special teams. And if they do well, that, you know, should help them earn some playing time at actual linebacker and maybe by the end of the season. But the main thing I can say right now is Tyler Atkinson is going to play a lot. He should finish at minimum third or fourth in snap count amongst linebackers at Texas next season. So, yeah. Another kind of interesting comment said from David Keith Williams said, I kind of wish I could wake up tomorrow and it is December 23rd, 2027. It would be very interesting to see where Atkinson, Kosick, Paul, and Rocky Cummings are in 2 years. Yeah, great point. Nathan said, Jordan, it kind of seems like Muschamp had a list of guys he wanted to offer out of Georgia. Yeah, in case you missed it, Texas offered like six kids in the state of Georgia in the last like 48, 72 hours. All of them, if not all of them, are 2027 prospects. So that was interesting. And yeah, I mean, you are right, Nathan. Those are guys that he had a list of and wanted to offer. And Texas was able to beat Georgia on some of those guys. So pretty good stuff there. Let's see. this is pretty funny. Yeah, and I'm with you here on Jonathan Cunningham, David Keith Williams. He's kind of Mo Blackwell, where it's like, hey, you know, took him as a linebacker, want to play linebacker, but he can't put on the weight, and he's not really a safety or nickel either. So he's kind of just this positionless defender that plays a lot of special teams. So, yeah, but I think he'll you know, be kept around like Blackwell was. He can help on special teams. They love him on special teams. And, you know, hey, maybe year four, year five, he can make it work at linebacker. Or even, I mean, he played a lot of nickel his senior year at North Crowley. Like whenever they'd play another team that had a really good receiver in the slot or outside, they'd sometimes have him follow him. And he honestly is probably the best linebacker in pass coverage I ever covered, at least from a high school recruit perspective. So he could maybe offer some value as a jumbo nickel, which would turn kind of a 4-2-5 to like a, you know, a 4-3-4. So he's going to be interesting because he's versatile. He has like a linebacker frame, you know, long arm, long limbed, but he's skinny. He needs to get more weight on his bones, but not everyone can put on weight. So he's going to be very interesting to watch, you know, over the next few years. So let's see. Any news on wide receivers coach candidates? I don't have any. Dave Keith Williams said Bo Barnes needs to have a great spring, summer, and preseason for Texas prior to next season. Nance has to develop him into a difference maker considering the limitations of linebacker. Agreed. I am fascinated to see the Texas linebackers in this bowl game because this is the list of them who will be playing. Ty Anthony Smith, Brad Spence, Bo Barnes, Jonathan Cunningham, and Marshall Landwehr. That's it. One of those guys is a former walk-on. One is a safety nickel tweener that is playing linebacker. So we're going to see a lot of Bo Barnes. He'll probably finish third in snap count, maybe fourth if Marshall Landwehr, the former walk-on, you know, plays well. But Ty Anthony Smith is your starter. Brad Spence will be another starter. And Ty Anthony Smith is going to have the green dot in his helmet. He'll have the radio in his ear because both Anthony Hill and Michael Taft are sitting out and opting out for NFL draft purposes. So Going to be very interesting. They're also playing a power run Michigan team. Not a great week to have only four, I guess, five scholarship linebackers available. So you will get a sneak peek at what it'll look like next year with Brad Spence, Ty'Anthony Smith, and Bo Barnes, you know, in the second level. So, yeah. Yeah, Johnny Manziel doing some Johnny Manziel stuff. I think it's kind of hilarious when people act surprised. Like, you don't buy a house near a volcano and get mad and the volcano destroys it. It's you signed up for that. You signed up for Johnny Manziel to show up early Saturday morning and got surprised when he didn't. Guess what? Everyone saw that coming. Sorry, I'm still catching up on these comments. Has Eberflus been fired yet, Nick? I'm not Nick, but I can tell you he hasn't. However, Jerry's given all the hints he's done. He was asked yesterday, like, how tough of a decision or discussion will it be, you know, with the defensive coordinator next year and him potentially coming back or getting fired. And Jerry just said, like, oh, that won't be a difficult decision. So Eberflus is done. Yeah, let's see. Still catching up. Is Chris Jackson staying in Texas? I do not think so. It's still possible, but it's not a 100% done deal. So. Yeah, we'll see. His contract ends after the season ends. We have heard nothing of Texas making an effort to re-sign him, and we very much do believe that if they wanted to re-sign him, it would have been done by now and announced by now, and that has not happened. So I am expecting, you know, the Citrus Cheez It Bowl game to probably be his last game. We will see, though. I know, you know, pretty much the entire market's reporting that, but – it is strange that, you know, he has not been re-signed and we haven't heard anything about that. So, yeah. And I get what you're saying here, David Keith Williams, but Colin Simmons is a top three, top two, maybe top one edge rusher, pass rusher in college football. It personnel-wise, talent-wise, is not a good idea to use my linebacker because you're taking away – your team's ability to rush the passer when you do that. So, yeah, but I mean, early on, whenever he first got recruited his sophomore year and he was a 6'2", 200, you know, like 200-pound edge rusher, everyone's like, yeah, he's going to have to play linebacker. He got a bit taller. We got his arm wingspan measurements, and he just went nuclear. He had like 26 sacks as a junior, and I mean, the rest was history. He was a full-time edge from that point on. So, yeah, let's see. That's pretty much what I got. And hey, honestly, real quick before I do get out of here, I did think Colin Simmons was going to be not a bust, but after seeing him his senior year, I was kind of confident he wasn't going to be a first round pick. And I was wrong. He's going to be a first rounder in April 2027. But the main thing I was worried about and concerned about was I was like, hey, he's 6'2.5", 6'3", and only has like a plus three, plus four wingspan, and is arriving at Texas about 225 pounds. The main thing that stands out about him and what makes him such a great player is his explosiveness, his first step, his speed off the edge. And I was concerned that, like, hey, he's never played over 230 pounds, 225. Texas is going to have to put weight on him. Every player has to put weight on when they get to college. Is he going to be able to retain that explosiveness? Because most of the time when you stack a bunch of weight on a kid, especially early on in their college career, they don't have the same explosive ability. And Colin Simmons, being the freak that he is, has somehow gotten more explosive with the weight he's put on. So he proved me wrong, but I definitely was concerned, you know, about how weight would affect his ability and, you know, his step off the edge. But like I said, proved me wrong, proved a lot of other people wrong. And very happy 24/7 ended up keeping him as a five-star because it would have looked pretty bad if they didn't. But Yeah, but hey, I'm getting out of here. Okay, David Keith Williams. You make a good point here, but this is like whenever people call Von Miller an outside linebacker. He's an edge rusher. Everyone knows what that is. Up next, what do we have up next? SEC Unfiltered recaps and breaks down round one of the college football playoff. Oh, no. Nathan, I didn't know it came out, but very sad stuff from that on South Oak Cliff. But like I said, up next, SEC Unfiltered recapping and breaking down round one of the college football playoff. I'm getting out of here and going to end the stream, but at 2 p.m., Chip and Zay will be back on the live stream, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, wherever your live stream. Leave a like, comment, subscribe. Also want to give a shout-out. Thank you, Noah Hinojosa and CB, for the donation. Appreciate y'all a ton. Can't do it without y'all's support, y'all's comments, of course, and viewership. And, hey, Merry Christmas. Y'all have a great one, and I will see y'all I'll see y'all next Monday. We're going to be off the rest of the week. So, yeah, but peace.